It's time to take a listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 22nd of September 2012. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday, the 22nd of September, Jan Scott talked to Simon Harvey about the Fit for the Future conference, and she spoke with Chris Canning from the Hay Paddock Vineyard.
It's now my very great pleasure to say good morning. We've got things all over the place here. To say good morning to Simon Harvey, who's here to talk to us about the Fit for the Future conference, which is happening next Thursday. Welcome, Simon.
Morning, Jan. Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Now, the Fit for the Future conference is aimed at small business people, I gather.
Well, essentially, it's aimed at small business people, but also big business people as well. And we actually hit 100 registrations last week, so it's looking really good. And I think we're gonna cap it off probably at about 120. So there's 20 places left for people who want to come along.
So you've got to get in pretty quickly.
Absolutely. Get in. You've got to be in quickly to win.
How much does it cost?
The tickets are $155.
Right. And that's for the whole day, is it?
It's for a half day, actually. We're going to kick off at just before 2 o'clock down at the Cloud on the waterfront. And it will go until 6 o'clock. We've got six really exciting talks from a range of people who will no doubt have a talk about that. And finishes at 6, and then we've got a drinks function from 6 until 7, 7:30. So, that's all included in the ticket price.
Okay, and how do people register?
You go to the website, Jen, right, and the website is www.fitforthefuture2012.com.
Right.
Kindly developed for us by James Samuel from the island, who's had a really strong island contingent helping us this event. Obviously, I've been organising it on behalf of the Natural Step New Zealand, which is a not-for-profit charity organisation that I run. And then we've had a really good, strong support base from the island. We've had James helping us with the website and social media. We've got Rosie Walford, who's a well-renowned leadership coach who's going to be running the day for us, Rosie from Palm Beach. We've got Yana Lynn Holly, whose work is well-renowned both here and internationally for capturing conference events in beautifully drawn form. So she's going to be there for the day. And then one other Waiheke person who's been really instrumental is Michael Henderson, who's the keynote speaker at the event, one of the world's leaders in organizational culture development and how to use culture as a force for strength and success in any business or organization.
Wow, that sounds interesting.
Mm.
Yeah. It's a fairly powerful lineup looking at your printout of the speakers. I mean, there's some high-powered business people there, aren't there?
There are. And this is the third year we've run this event. And our philosophy really is that if we get good speakers along, then people are going to have a great day. And so we choose the people who present really for their ability to engage. You know, they're experts, but they're also excellent speakers. So if you come along, you're going to be entertained for the day as well as learn a whole lot.
Yeah, well, they cover a whole raft of things too, don't they? I mean, it's a wide range of subjects that they are following, promoting or rather presenting.
Mm.
You mentioned Michael Henderson. And there's also Charles Anderson, who's CEO of Sovereign Assurance.
That's right, yeah. So Charles is a fantastic man. I met him a couple of years ago when we did a little bit of work for Sovereign. And in my mind, he is one of the most visionary corporate chief executives in the country, and we're really lucky to have him. He actually came here, he came here to retire and has been building a lifestyle eco property down in the South Island near Wanaka. And as I understand the story, he was approached to take the chief executive spot at Sovereign and was basically, you know, urged to take that business to the next level. And his vision for it is to become the first genuinely sustainable insurance company in the world. And that's a pretty bold vision. And I have a lot of respect and admiration for somebody who's prepared to put that out there and back it up. And so, of course, he was one of the, I think, the only major corporate CEO from New Zealand who went to the Rio Plus 20 Earth Summit conference this year, which he's going to be talking about why he did that and also what he learned there. And I think he's going to be talking about really what he learned about what's happening in other countries and the risk for New Zealand to fall behind internationally in really what constitutes strong, successful organizations that can, you know, actually make people's lives a lot better than possibly we're doing at the moment. So it's really about creating more value.
Right. So this conference is not just about developing your business, but developing it in a sustainable fashion.
That's right. Yeah. It's sustainability is one of those words that has become slightly polarized in people's minds. I think a lot of people equate it with green. And of course, it's about so much more than that. It's actually about creating quality of life for people. It's about creating a progressive, successful future that we can all be proud of. And so this event really is about, it's about change, it's about progress, and it's about having a strong vision. And all of the speakers, in one way or another, will be talking about that and sharing their secrets, their views and wisdom about what it takes to do that and how you can do it.
Right. And of course, we're talking about Fit for the Future 2012 conference, which is happening next Thursday, the 27th of October, down at the Cloud. And we're talking to Simon Harvey, who's been heavily involved in the organisation of this event. And you say, Simon, that this is the second time it's happened?
It's the third time. The first year, it was actually called Co-Create the Future. That was the first one we ran. And then last year, we really upped the ante and we did a full-day conference. We had two international speakers last year. And this year, we've kept the same theme of going for high-powered, high-quality speakers and the same sort of theme about progress. But we've sort of, to make our lives a little bit easier, we turned it into a half-day event this year, and that's gone down really well. It's been very well received, and everybody who's looked at this has said, you know, great lineup, and the quality of the people who've registered is fantastic. We've got representatives from most of the major companies in Auckland, Fonterra, Deloitte, PwC, you know, all of the sort of the big firms who really understand that things can be better. We can be smarter about how we do stuff, about designing the way that we manage people, designing the way we deliver products and services to consumers. And so that's really what we're all about, is helping people see more clearly the future that can be created and how they can create value from that. So obviously business success, but also delivering better things for people.
Mm, exactly. And just you mentioning some of those big corporates who are going to be there, that shouldn't put off the small business people that are out there in registering to go themselves, because it's not just a corporate, big corporate event, is it? It's to encourage business people in general to grow their business and do it sustainably.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's a lot of small businesses, particularly small business owners, who have registered, who, you know, want to create an advantage for themselves by being better than their competitors. So we've got a full range, really, of people from big corporate, small businesses, and also from local government.
Oh, right. Well, that's good. Now, some of the other speakers you've got, Daniel Batten, he's going to talk on how to influence people authentically. Principle Beyond the Ceiling and teacher of the art of living.
Yeah, so Daniel's a really interesting character. He describes himself as the only person in New Zealand who has been in the NBR, the New Zealand Business Review, for both his role as the chief executive and as an actor. And he's a really interesting guy. He's recognised as one of the best investment pitchers in the country. So he's started up three successful businesses, and he's also used those businesses to create a lot of opportunity for underprivileged people or people who are, you know, struggling. and at the same time taking them to an international level. So he's a really experienced business leader, but he's also an actor, and he has a very creative side to him, and also quite a spiritual side. So he brings together a whole range of different experiences. And what he's really studied to bring all of that together is, how can you be influential, whether you are pitching for funding for a new business or whether you're trying to get people to follow you as a leader to some sort of goal, whether that's, you know, spiritual goal or social project. And he wrote a book about that, and he's going to be sharing at the conference then his 6 secrets to incredible influence, which he calls being influential authentically, which basically means you don't have to change what you say. It's about how you say it and how you present yourself and the way that you deliver the words that you're using. And so I'm really looking forward to what he's going to talk about there, Jan. I think it's going to be useful for anybody in anything that they do.
Mm. Well, it's good to get somebody else's feedback on your presentation, because you don't see it the way other people see it. And particularly if it's done in a positive fashion rather than as a critique, you know, which would be really useful.
Mm.
And then you've got Tim Hodson and Katie Horton from Jazzmax, who'll be talking about changing the workscapes. That's something that's often forgotten, isn't it?
Yeah, well, Tim Hodson actually won an award from the design industry a year or so ago for his contribution to workplace design. And, of course, Jazzmax are one of the leading architectural companies in the country. We're really grateful. Again, another island influence, or two island influences here. One is Jerome Partington, who is the sustainability manager at Jazzmax, who's a good friend of mine and has helped me with the organisation of the conference, but also enabled us to invite Tim and Katie, who is also a Waiheke Islander, known to many, Katie Horton, to share some of their work and really pioneering and leading work in creating workspaces that are productive, so they're designed to actually enhance the activity that you're doing there, but also, you know, healthy. And it's one thing that a lot of people forget, that there's an incredible amount of research around the world now about how unhealthy workplaces can be. So they've done the research to develop, okay, how do you begin to bring these things together? Healthy workspaces that actually foster productivity and strong team spirit, but also that are beautiful to look at and to be in. So again, I think it's going to be really interesting to hear what their view is about how workplaces will develop into the future to create healthier, both socially and, you know, for people and for businesses, healthier environments.
Mm. You're listening to Waiheke Radio, Island Life, and we're talking to Simon Harvey, who's involved in the organisation of the Fit for the Future 2012 conference, which is happening this coming Thursday, the 27th, at the Cloud on Prince's Wharf, Queen's Wharf, rather. And it's not just for corporate businesses, it's for small businesses, how to grow your business into the future and do it sustainably. And some of the other speakers that you've got coming along, Simon, is we've got Sam Judd, co-founder and events director, Sustainable Coastlines, talking about motivating people for good.
Mm. So some people on the island may have seen Sam. He talked at the Pecha Kucha event, 2 or 3 months ago now, that was held in the Artworks Theatre. And Sam's an incredible guy. I mean, he's done some amazing things. In 2 years, they've taken this organisation, which they started really as a hobby, called Sustainable Coastlines, which was basically a bunch of surfers who enjoyed the water but were disappointed with the fact that there was so much rubbish on the beaches and in the water. And so they started getting groups together to clean them up, and have turned it into a career, if you like, now. Raised a whole lot of money to support this organisation, got a lot of support from businesses, and the council, and going around places like Rangitoto and different beaches around Auckland and in the Pacific, and picking up hundreds of tons of rubbish. And then they don't just pick it up, they then arrange it, they count every single piece, absolutely every single piece, every bottle top, every cigarette butt, every plastic bottle, everything that they find, and they arrange them in beautiful patterns and take photographs of them. And then they use that to explain to people, you know, how much stuff is getting thrown down drains or dumped and then being blown across the water to the beautiful beaches in the Hauraki Gulf and other places. And, I mean, it's really inspirational what they've done. And in order to do that, he has had to be able to motivate a huge number of people, not just within their own team, but the people who they want to work with. So, you know, the big corporates who they take out on days and get together and do this, the school children or other groups, community groups that they take out, and, you know, for a half day or so, we'll just pick up rubbish from these beautiful places. They did a fantastically interesting project where they dressed up as sort of council employees, and they went and emptied some of the stormwater drains in Queen Street. And it was absolutely staggering how much rubbish people were dropping and was finding its way there, and then, of course, finding its way down into you know, the water from there. So, amazing guy, really good speaker as well. I mean, he's a very confident guy, but very engaging, very entertaining. So, again, I'm really looking forward to hearing what he's got to say on Thursday afternoon.
Right. And finally, we've got Jacqueline Ireland, who's the chief executive of Colmar Brunton, talking about consumer trends and attitudes to sustainable business in 2012.
Mm. So, look, and I'm very grateful to Jacqueline. She's supported us every year we've run this event. She's come along and shared the results of Colmar Brunton's survey, which is called Better Business, Better World, which they've run now for 4 years. And what that is, it takes a pulse of New Zealanders' attitudes and consumers' attitudes to products which are marketed as being more sustainable or green products, eco products. And they find out, you know, where are people at on that? Is it something that people want more and more of? How much are they prepared to pay? Which companies do they think are doing the best job? Which companies do they think are doing the worst job and why? And so it's really, you know, very useful to actually have a feel for the perception from consumers about the demand, because if you ask anybody out there, would you like to buy a product that is good for people and good for the planet, or one that is bad for people and bad for the planet, everybody will want to do the good thing. But what stops a lot of people is the perception that that might be more expensive, that it isn't something that appeals to them. And so to actually understand some of that and the reasons why is incredibly useful to any business that wants to tap into that demand. And the work that we do really is to help organizations, businesses, business people, small and large, to sell their product or service to people in a way that makes them feel good about what they're doing. Because, as I say, everybody wants that good feeling, and it can be an incredible source of advantage for businesses who have this perception, whether your product's on the shelf or whether you're talking face-to-face, that what you do is good. Mm. And that's what we help people do, is uncover that. And the research from people like Jacqueline at the Colmar Brunton is incredibly helpful for that.
Mm, I bet it is. You're listening to Waiheke Radio, your community radio. It's Island Life, and I'm Jan Scott, your host until noon. We're talking to Simon Harvey about the Fit for the Future 2012 conference that's happening on Thursday the 27th at the Cloud from 2 till 7, is that right?
Well, yeah. Well, the first keynote presentation will kick off at 2. That'll be Jacqueline setting the context. But we're going to start just before then at 12:45. Registration starts at 1:20, and there are just a little bit over 20 tickets still left for anybody who's keen to come. And one business I would love to see there would be some representatives from Fuller's. I think you know that there's a huge opportunity for the service that they provide, really valuable service that they provide to the island, to be improved and create a better culture within that organisation. So I'd love to, so anybody can have a chat with Doug and get him down there. I think he'll enjoy the day. So it would be wonderful to see him.
Right. And to register, you can do that online.
Yep, www.fitforthefuture2012.com. There's some information about the conference there, and you can register online.
Right, that's great. Now, how did you get involved with this conference?
Well, I've been involved with this organisation called The Natural Step, which is it's a New Zealand chapter of an international organisation called The Natural Step, which was started 20 years ago. And the guys in Sweden who started this organisation off were interested to understand how could you help people achieve or work towards being more sustainable. And so they did a whole lot of scientific work about what does sustainable actually mean. And through that created a definition of sustainability. And so the Natural Step in New Zealand has used that work to work with businesses and government to help them create what we call strategic pathways towards more sustainable outcomes, which basically means we help them work with groups of people and organisations to share a view or a vision and an understanding about what it would take to improve their performance, to improve their environmental performance, to improve their performance around people, and also to maintain financial health. So the organisation that we've been running in New Zealand, we always felt that there was scope to share our message with more people. And so 3 years ago, we had this idea of having a conference, which initially was for us to be sharing the work that we were doing ourselves and with different organizations. And then last year, we really decided to take a broader approach and bring who we thought the most engaging and wise speakers were, who could really share some valuable knowledge with those people who were involved in this. I mean, you might call them change agents, if you like. And so it really sprung from that. And this year is, I think, another milestone in terms of the quality of that event. And the fact that, you know, when I look through the list of people who've registered, it's a who's who of people trying to make a difference in a very practical sense. So it's, you know, the event itself is going to be fantastic, but the opportunity to mix with other leaders from all walks of life, business, government, community, will be fantastic. It's going to be a really powerful group. There'll be a lot of energy in that room, I think, Jen.
I'm sure there will be. Have you been involved on the business side or academic way in this?
Oh, no, look, I'm not very academic. My work is with businesses and with local government. So this year I led the mayoral task force for Nelson City Council, who have really set out a vision for Nelson to become a sustainable city, which is very exciting. And they're really working hard to integrate that across both the council, business and entrepreneurial activity, the community, and the local industries there, which of course some big primary industries like forestry and fishing and what have you. So that's been very exciting. But at the same time, we also work with businesses like Sovereign. In the past, we've worked with people like Comvita, Les Mills, BizZone, and New Zealand Trade and Enterprise, a whole range of different businesses. And we currently run courses, business programs, strategic programs for businesses in a number of regions around the North Island, Auckland, the Manawatu and Waikato. And this year in the Waikato, it was fantastic. We had a large dairy company come on board who found it absolutely, you know, amazing, the opportunities that they were just not quite seeing but were there in front of them. And again, as a group, we managed to get them to begin to understand that. And that's really what we do. We help people open their eyes to challenge the status quo and think about how things might be done a bit differently if we really want to do the right thing, create more value for people and for the planet.
Right. So what was the name of the group that you're involved with?
The Natural Step New Zealand.
The Natural Step New Zealand.
The Natural Step. There's plenty of information. All our work is shared freely on the internet.
Okay.
So there's lots of stuff out there. We don't keep it secret. We share it with everybody. And the aim for us is to put ourselves out of business so that everybody knows how to do this properly.
Right. Do you have a website?
Yeah, we do. It's www.thenaturalstep.org. / New Zealand if you want to go to the New Zealand bit, but you can also have a look at what's going on in the other countries of the world. And I mean, some of the clients that we've worked with internationally, people like Nike, for example, one of the big companies, McDonald's in Sweden, Interface Carpets is probably the company that really epitomizes the work that we do. Anybody in the construction industry would have heard of them, because if you're building a 5-star rated building, then you're going to be looking at their carpet. It's simply, you know, the best product
right.
they've created.
So if somebody can't make it to the conference on Thursday, they could certainly get in touch with the group and get some advice from you?
Oh, absolutely.
Does it work like that?
Look, we're always happy to talk to people if they're interested in this, and anything that we can do to either steer them towards the right source of information if it's not us, or if it is us, then we'd be more, you know, we're always happy to discuss that. What we will do is share the videos from the conference freely on the internet afterwards, so people will be able to look at those. It's never quite the same as coming along, and of course you miss the opportunity to really catch up and mingle. And I think one of the things that Rosie Wolford, who, I mean, she's an amazing lady we have here on the island, like so many of the people we have here, just fantastically knowledgeable and skillful. And her business, which is called The Big Stretch, which is a leadership, adventure trip where you go off-site and go away on holiday, basically, but go through a leadership experience. And I think I saw from her website that in 2012 it was voted as the best program of that nature in the world. So wow. She's going to be there facilitating. So what you can expect between each of the sessions here is essentially a facilitated thought discussion that Rosie will be doing. And so she'll be, you know, sharing some of her wisdom and encouraging people to interpret what they're learning and really embedded in their brains. So it's, as I said, I mean, it's going to be a really powerful day. It'll be good fun. There'll be lots of discussion, lots of opportunity to meet people. But if you can't make it, the videos of the presentations will be available online afterwards.
Okay. Now, have I correctly picked up that the format for the day will be individual presentations? They're not workshops that you've got to decide, I'm going to go to that one and not that one.
No, it's more like a TED-style event. So they're quite short pieces. Four of the presentations will be 20 minutes, so you don't get a sore bum from sitting in the same place for too long. And the aim is that, you know, 20 minutes is more than long enough to really share some nuggets of wisdom and set those into an engaging presentation. And then the two keynote speakers, which is Charles Anderson, CEO of Sovereign, and Michael Henderson, from Cultures at Work, the corporate anthropologist. Those are slightly longer. They're 35 minutes. So that's what you'll get. Each one will be broken up in between with some discussion and mingling around and a bit of tea and then some drinks afterwards.
Sounds like a great format.
Yeah,
it is a great format. Now, there was one other thing I had in my mind that's just gone clear out of my head. Curses. the conference, of course, we're talking about is Fit for the Future 2012, and it's specifically aimed at business people, small or large, as to how you can best progress into the future in a sustainable fashion. Is that a nutshell?
That's it. It is, but it's very practical. I mean, as I said, it's not about, you know, how do you go green. This is about how do you motivate people to deliver improve performance. And if you can improve performance as reducing your environmental impact whilst increasing the value that you provide to those people who use your business or your service, then that for us is a more sustainable outcome.
Right.
So it's very holistic, it's very practical from people who are leading their fields in this space and creating success stories. So, for example, Michael Henderson, who unfortunately doesn't do a huge amount of work in New Zealand, most of his work is offshore, particularly in Australia at the moment, is one of those people who has done the work required to understand how do you motivate an organization of people to lift their engagement and their performance and their loyalty, all of the effort that they put in, by, you know, huge magnitude. So the average, I think the average amount of engagement is sort of between 20 and 30% in a large business. And he reckons he can get it up to 80%. If you understand if you understand people and the way they think and their values and how that relates to where they work, then you can begin to, you know, actually say, well, that's great, bring your values, bring your energy, but let's harness it as well for the things that we're trying to do in our business. Mm-hmm. And when you do that well, of course, you'll, and I'm sure the listeners here will have all experienced the difference between a place that you go, whether it's a cafe or, you know, a garage or wherever, where people care about what they do and care about you and those who don't. And the difference that makes in terms of the loyalty you get from your customers and the quality of the service that you get is huge. And that's what makes the difference between a good, sustainable business and one which is probably not going to be around forever. So it's those sort of practical things. But when you add to that, you know, the vision, someone like Charles Anderson, who wants to create the world's first sustainable insurance company, and that's, you know, a really bold, ambitious thing. You know, you can begin to see how if you can motivate people, you can actually tackle those sorts of goals.
Mm.
And in that way, New Zealand, you know, we can improve our national performance. We can be a leader in the things that we want to lead, whether that's agriculture or tourism or new businesses. But we need to get all these things right. So this is our contribution, the Natural Steps, New Zealand's contribution to, you know, let's share some knowledge and let's work together to improve the way that we do things.
Only way to go, really.
Starts with knowledge.
Yes, it does, and sharing that knowledge,
yeah,
which is great. Now, the Fit for the Future 2012 conference, is that sponsored at all?
Yep, it is. We've privileged to have enjoyed good support this year again. Jazzmax have sponsored it, Jazzmax Architect and Sovereign Assurance, but also a number of other partners have continued their support. We've got Resene Paints, who are supporting the networking drinks. So that's great. We've got Element, who've supported this year, and then a number of supporting partners, Woolly Lemon Creative, who do all of our design work and help us with our media relationships, Omni Graphics, who do all our painting, and Green Air, which is a sustainable plant company, who are going to be making the cloud look greener than ever for us with some beautiful native plants.
That sounds great. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming in. We've been talking to Simon Harvey about the Fit for the Future 2012 conference, which is happening at the Cloud on Thursday the 27th. That's next Thursday. And between 2 p.m. and 7 p.m, registrations are sort of 1:15-ish.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. And you can register online. There are only 20 spaces left?
I think, yeah, just 20, just certainly less than 25, but around 20.
20 spaces left for this conference, so you've got to get in quick if you want to take advantage of the amazing range of speakers, motivators, encouragers that are going to be there. And you can do that online. And what's your website again?
Yep, go to the website. That's www.fitforthefuture2012.com. Beautifully designed for us by James Samuel. Thank you, James. And you can register online there, pay by credit card, and come along and be the best investment you make. And I'd also just like to say, Jen, thank you very much to Liz Walters from Gulf News, who has been very supportive in the Gulf News and written some really interesting pieces on this, and also to the marketplace for their support. It's great, as I say, how many people from the island have help with this event, which is a national event, but it's amazing, really, when you tap into the skills and the people on the island. We're really blessed, I think, here to have so many wonderful people.
We are indeed. Are you a local?
I am.
Oh, right. Right. I didn't ask you that at the beginning. I should have, otherwise I wouldn't let you in the door. That's great, because you're... considerable input is important as well. That's got to be acknowledged, I think.
Yeah, I enjoy this. The first year I did it, I always said to myself, I'd always wanted to organise a conference. I'd never done it, and we did it. And it's actually, it's pretty stressful, but it's also a huge amount of fun. And when you get there on the day, it's just amazing to see it all come together. And that's when you're so grateful for the contributions of everybody else. Mm. And again, you know, I'm really grateful to people like Michael and Rosie, Jerome, James, Yana from the island, who've all given their support and encouragement for this. It's fantastic to bring all those people together.
That's great. Well, Simon Harmiget, thank you very much, and we wish you all the best for the Fit for the Future 2012 conference.
Thank you very much, Jan.
Thank you.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
Now, it's my very great pleasure to say good morning to Chris Canning. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jan.
And how are you on this bright and beautiful morning?
Well, the sun is shining.
That's good.
And I guess the scallops are getting fatter.
Oh, that's got to be good.
And the tomatoes are ready for planting.
Right.
The vines are bursting, of course. So I guess this is what nature does to us every year after a dreadful winter when we think we'll kill ourselves. Along comes spring.
Yeah, and makes you wax lyrical.
Well, for people who don't know, I'm sitting in the only radio station in the world that has a view of the sparkling waters of Onewarra Bay.
I know, it's stunning, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nearly as good as your wonderful house in Onetangi and your accommodation lodge.
Yeah, well, we nearly all have a view in Waiheke. All the views are different. I think that's why we're here, isn't it?
I agree.
Yeah. It is a beautiful place, and it's that rare mixture of being close to the city and yet also being close to the country. And after you've been here for a few years, you start to take it for granted. You need to go away, unfortunately, which costs money, in order to remind yourself of how beautiful it is.
Yep, that's for real. But you've managed to successfully sort of marry two businesses together, as it were, haven't you, with the vineyard and your accommodation?
Yeah, I guess those are the two obvious ways of getting an income on Waiheke, and Waiheke does does present a challenge to people who come here because it simply isn't able to provide sufficient income. People have to go off the island every day. I notice you go off the island every day and you represent quite a big demographic of people who have to get up in the morning, leave the place they chose to live in, go and work in the city. Admittedly, they don't have to drive through traffic to do it, but the only way that they can bring money back into the household is from working off the island. And that creates a problem for the businesses on the island because they don't have those people here during the week spending money, so they can't service them. So we have a strange situation where I think we have 7,000 to 8,000 permanent residents, but a very large part of the working population contained within that number is actually not here during the week.
Mm. Yeah, it is a bit of an odd demographic, I suppose, for business people anyway. But I find that I need to get off the island. You know, I'd go mad if I was here 24/7. But and I enjoy the buzz of the city, I suppose. But then I also enjoy when they slip the rope on the quick cat of an evening and we say farewell to the big smoke. It's just such a nice feeling. And you immediately feel that you're, you know, relaxed and on the way home.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't go off the island all that much, I have to say, although my partner gets stir-crazy and has that same feeling of needing to go away. But I notice the morning ferry, whether it's 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock, everybody looks quite grey and dour. But that evening ferry, starting at 4 o'clock onwards, everyone's got a little lift in their step. And, of course, the bar does good trade as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, that could have something to do with it. And speaking of bars and things alcoholic, you make a world-winning Shiraz at Hay Paddock.
Yeah, that's what we set out to make. I'd been in the business on and off for at least two lifetimes of worry. My long-standing friend and partner, Brian Mogridge, and I decided that we would plant a small vineyard in order to keep ourselves occupied through our twilight years. Well, of course, what happened was we became over-occupied with it, well, me especially. Brian is a very busy person anyway. But we determined we wanted to make a really world-class red wine, and after 40 years in the business in various locations, growing grapes in Hawke's Bay and Marlborough and Auckland and what have you, I'd come to the conclusion that the variety and the location that was giving the best indication of being capable of producing a world-class red wine consistently was Syrah, the Australian Shiraz version. David Evans and others had already shown that they were producing extremely good wines from it. So we decided we would plant that variety, and then I looked at giving it a twist, because I didn't want it to be a Me Too Syrah. I wanted it to be a red wine that people would say, that's an iconic red wine. And that usually takes 15 to 20 years. And in our case, we seem to strike a chord within a very quick time. So our first vintage, in fact, won the International Wine and Spirit Competition trophy for the best international Shiraz Syrah in 2010, which surprised us, I have to say. I think it struck a chord because the international judges recognized it as perhaps having French overtones, and they were used to the French wines. That was their sort of judging palate. But the other ingredient was a small amount of Petit Verdot, which is a blending variety from Bordeaux, actually, not from the Rhone Valley, which is where Syrah comes from. And the Petit Verdot, as we've now found out, does extraordinarily well on Waiheke Island. We're not entirely sure why, but it may be the minerality of the soils. It's certainly something to do with the climate and the period during which it ripens, because that's critical. The last 3 weeks, usually, of the maturing of grapes is when it all comes together. And on Waiheke Island, we have relatively consistent weather through the second half of March and the early part of April, which is when red wines really develop their phenolic flavours. And Petit Verdot is producing far more character here on the island than I've seen it anywhere else. And you don't see it as a single variety wine very often. You do occasionally in Australia. Anyway, we chose to blend a small quantity of Petit Verdot with our wine, and I think that's what's made the difference.
Right. And is that unique to your particular blend?
Yes, I don't know anyone else that's doing it. I don't know anyone that had ever done it before. And I guess you could say that it was a calculated decision, obviously, because we blend a lot of parcels of different fruit in order to produce our best wines each year anyway. So it's not as if we were going to throw in Petit Verdot and, my God, it didn't work. It was far more a question of you can see that it is going to add something to it. And now we are producing a wine which we call Petite Reserve, which has got a very high proportion of Petit Verdot in it, and that's receiving a great reception as well.
Okay. Now, how did you decide on the piece of land that you bought?
Oh, that's very simple. Somebody rang me up late at night and said there's a parcel of land in the Onitangi Valley for sale. It's going to come on the market tomorrow. And it was a time in the last decade when land on Waiheke was actually valued and everybody was after pieces of land. And I said, oh, well, I'll come down and have a look at it, without much intention of being serious about it. And it's in the same valley as Timotu and Stony Ridge. And I looked at it. It had been a hay paddock, obviously. Mm. That's what we named the wine after, which meant really nothing more than it probably got plenty of sunshine to ripen the hay. Either that or by accident, nobody had decided to build on it. And I rang Brian, who I think was in Melbourne at the time, and I said, look, there's a piece of land here that might just suit our purpose. What do you think? And he said, oh, go for it. So that's how we did it. You see, the thing about Waiheke is that nearly all of the plantable land has a slope. It's faceted because the whole island is a series of hills. And so you can be pretty sure that the drainage is going to be as a result of the slope. You just have to decide whether the slope is exposed to cold winds. If they're exposed to the southwest, then you're probably in trouble in the spring. If they're exposed to the northeast, then they're probably in trouble in the summer, particularly in February when the tropical storms come through. This was not exposed to either of those, so it was a reasonable risk. But what's actually underneath the soil, you have no idea. Hmm. You know, you cannot remove the topsoil and examine it and say, I've examined the soil, it's absolutely perfect for grape growing. Most of the soils on Waiheke are clay-based, or at least sandstone, degraded sandstone-based. They're very old in most cases, and they have a lot of veins of minerals running through them, because, as you know, there was mining of minerals throughout the whole Gulf, and manganese is the prominent one, and that's why we think Waiheke wines can be picked out of a lineup as being slightly different. They do have a minerality to them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Was the land particularly difficult to prepare for vines, having been a hay paddock?
Two-thirds of it was absolutely perfect. Didn't have to do anything to it at all except to deep plough it for drainage purposes before planting. The usual sorts of things. Raise the pH levels dramatically, so that's anything up to 4 or 5 tons of lime per acre initially. It doesn't matter how much lime you throw into Waiheke soils. It's going to be beneficial. It just sweetens it up. And a third of it was poor, in the sense the drainage was poor and what have you. And when we set about to try and improve the drainage on that land, we ran into the great bugbear of life on Waiheke Island, which, of course, is bureaucracy. So that cost us an unnecessary amount of money. But now I would say that it's a very, very good vineyard.
Mm. Right, so obviously money well worth spent.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, your record speaks for itself, doesn't it? With it's not just your first vintage that won an award. I think you've just recently had another success.
Yes, every vintage but one has won an award. We determined that if the vintage simply wasn't good enough, we'd bite the bullet and not produce a wine under our label for that year, and that year was 2011. And as things go in the winemaking business, to have had one write-off out of something like seven or eight vintages is not a bad average. Mm. It's expensive, of course, to write it off. We simply sold the wine in bulk to somebody else, but every other vintage we have declared a vintage and have won awards internationally for all of them, and that's really what we want to do, is to keep the standard up.
Mm. So what was the last award that you won?
Well, we've just won one of the hardest awards for us to win, and that is to win a gold medal in the Shiraz class in Australia.
Wow.
In the Boutique Winemakers of Australia's annual awards, which is where all the sort of cult wines from Australia are entered. And, of course, the biggest class is Shiraz, because that's their dominant grape. They grow Shiraz like we grow Sauvignon Blanc.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we were pleasantly surprised, I guess, is what you'd say.
Yes, indeed. That's great. You must be one of the few vineyards that, if the vintage isn't up to scratch, doesn't bottle that as a secondary label. Is that right?
Yes, I think so. I mean, it is deliberate with us. We don't rely on cellar door. We don't have a restaurant, and we do rely on achieving a relatively high price for the wine, because we have small production and the costs are high, and that simply reflects the reality of producing boutique wines of that level. But you can't sell wine for a high price unless it has high quality as well, and the minute you drop your quality, then it's difficult to recover your reputation again. The other thing is that we've deliberately chosen to target an end of the market which is small. It's the connoisseur market. It's the real wine lover market, and it probably at best represents maybe 2.5 to 3% of wine drinkers. Mm-hmm. Because people who say, oh, yes, we drink wine, they really mean, you know, yeah, we load up our shopping trolley at the supermarket and we take advantage of the fact that wine is heavily discounted. They don't say, oh, yeah, we drink wine and we save up and we always buy a case of the Hay Paddock wines at $60 a bottle. Mm. It's just not in their budget.
Mm.
So because we're targeting a relatively small part of the wine drinking market, to rely on New Zealand alone would be suicide. And this is why we targeted the international wine competitions and hope to build our business over the years internationally rather than just locally. Now, having said that, it still leaves us tiny. The figure that we like to quote in the Waiheke Wine Growers Association is that New Zealand produces less than 1% of the world's wine. Waiheke Island produces less than 1% of New Zealand's wine. And Syrah represents less than 1% of the grape varieties planted in New Zealand. So do you think that we're going to swamp the world and have an oversupply?
No.
Most unlikely.
Yes, indeed. You're listening to Waiheke Radio, your community radio, and this is Island Life. And I'm Jan Scott, and I'm talking to Chris Canning from the Hay Paddock Vineyard. Chris, are you the winemaker for the vineyard?
Yes, yeah. I'm the winemaker, and if your accounts are not up to date, I'm also the accountant.
or the debt collector.
The debt collector. No, actually, Jules is the debt collector. Oh, right. She's got a much better style than me.
Yeah, now, do you use grapes from anywhere else than the vineyard?
No, you've got to wash your mouth out, Jan.
Right.
They are all estate grown, and also we have been absolutely adamant within the Wine Growers Association in the last decade that no grower on Waiheke Island should put Waiheke Island wine on their label unless it is 100% from Waiheke Island grapes.
Right. Yeah. I suppose that's hard to do if you're doing quantity.
Yes, it might well be, and it's also the case that there are varieties which are better grown somewhere else. So, for instance, you can have Cable Bay and Goldwater as it was, or Goldie as it is now, choosing to source their Sauvignon Blanc from Marlborough, which is the right place to source it from. But what we're vigilant about is that it's not represented as Waiheke wine.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this year the weather was a bit up and down. Has that been affected the grapes for the next vintage at all?
It is the case that the weather at bud formation stage in the previous season will have an impact on the fruitfulness of the vines the following season. The 2012 vintage was not a good vintage, but it was saved in the last 3 to 4 weeks by a fine weather spell, sort of Indian summer from mid-March onwards. The previous season, 2011, had been a dreadful season, as I've just indicated. We chose not to make a wine. We're concerned that after a bad season that we would have poor fruit in the following season, 2012. In fact, that wasn't the case, and I think the reason is because you tend to overlook the critical time, which is not the summer itself. It's the late spring period when the buds are swelling. And then there is another process that the vines have to go through, which is a maturing, a senescence of the wood on which the next season's fruit is going to be grown. If that isn't fully completed, then you have an issue with fruitfulness in the next season, and we managed to have a completely mature canopy by the time it closed down. So I think this year is going to be okay.
That's good. That's something to look forward to. You have a subscription system for people to buy wine. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, like most people now, we realise that shopping is done at least in part on the internet. People certainly go looking for the information and for the price comparisons on the internet. So we have a very sophisticated website where people can not only learn a lot of information about the vineyard and the operation and the wines and the philosophy, but can also close a deal. And we like to think that people who are paying the sort of money that we charge for wine are doing it because they're interested in the story as well as the wine, and that they will follow us. So we reward them by ensuring that they, if they become members of our, what we call the Syrah Society, which is just a club, a wine club, that they get very good discounts. And those discounts can be in the range of 20 to 30% from what would normally be a recommended cellar door price. And we do free delivery and that sort of thing. And wherever possible, we try and get them together at functions so that they can all have bragging rights about the other wines that they've got in their cellars. And that's a lot of fun. And we encourage them to be rude and irreverent and have a lot of fun.
Well, that's what wine is there to help jolly things along a bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Do you have, can anybody subscribe?
Yes, well, I mean, the qualification is quite easy. Take the checkbook out and buy your first case of wine and say, I want to be a member and I want to get those discounts, and you're welcomed with open arms.
That's great, and yeah. You can do that online?
Yes, yeah.
What is your website?
The website is, would you believe, thehaypaddock.co.nz.
All one word. That's nice and easy. Yeah. And so you can register online and you can pay online.
Yes. And Jan, I recommend them to drink the wine because sitting opposite me is someone who tends to hoard wine, I think. She doesn't always drink it.
Only expensive wine.
We, the winemakers, like you to drink it.
Oh, right. I'll have to come and pick it up one of these days. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for coming in, Chris. It's been a delight to talk to you. We've been talking to Chris Canning from the Hay Paddock Vineyard. And, oh, before you go, we must give a plug to your accommodation.
Yes. Well, Clifftops is
a beautiful spot.
Yeah, right above the bay at Onitangi. And we have beautiful oceanfront suites, which we let. And then they're not just for lovers and honeymooners. They're also for mature people who want to rest and enjoy the beautiful view and sleep and read and play music.
That sounds great. Now that you've got a website for that as well, haven't you?
Oh, you can reach that on the Hay Paddock website as well.
Okay, that's great. Yeah. Well, thanks very much for coming in, Chris, and good luck with the next vintage.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by the Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.